Setlist, the music business podcast from CMU.
This week, Sony Music tells US politicians to act on AI loopholes. Welcome to Setlist, the music business podcast from CMU. I'm Andy Malt. With me is Chris Cook.
Hello, Chris.
That was a really weird way of saying hello. Hello there.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi. On this week's show, Sony exec Dennis Kuker's call for US politicians to act on AI and the bitter dispute unfolding between Daryl Hall and John Oates. But first, Chris, tell me something that stood out for you in the music world this week.
Well, it was Spotify Wrapped, wasn't it, this week?
It was, yeah.
And what I thought when I saw that was happening this week, obviously Spotify Wrapped, everybody listening to this surely knows that's when Spotify provides all of its users with some stats about the music they've been listening to this year in the hope that they immediately start sharing those stats on social media and thus deliver Spotify a load of free promo. So what I was interested in this year was, will that ruse still work off Spotify's users? And they also have stats for artists and podcasters as well, and they're meant to share it. Would it work? And actually, in my feeds, I don't think it did work as much as it has in the last couple of years.
No.
But it definitely started trending, and there was a lot of articles on news sites about the fact that Spotify Wrapped had happened. So I think it did kind of work, even if for me, in my bubble, less so. So not so much in your bubble either.
Yeah, I would say that although I did see people posting it, artists, their own stats, and just Spotify users, their personal stats for their all their listening, but definitely not as much as in previous years. I think probably last year was the absolute peak of it, but this year, not so much. I did share mine, though.
Did you?
On my Instagram.
Even you don't use Spotify anymore.
Exactly. Mine just says, you haven't listened to enough music to get a Spotify Wrapped, but here's a playlist you could listen to. So I shared that.
I think I did post last year because I think on Thursday, which is when Spotify Wrapped, was it Thursday or Wednesday? Anyway, whatever day it all unwrapped, I got a, you know how Facebook does the, oh, you posted this a year ago, 2 years ago, 5 years ago. And it seems to be doing that constantly to me at the moment.
I mean, I also don't use Facebook, so no, I don't know that.
And I got a Facebook alert saying, oh, this time last year, you posted about your Spotify Wrapped. So assuming Facebook wasn't lying to me, last year I did post, this year I didn't, because I didn't think that anybody in my various social networks needed to know that I am still listening to mainly Chili Con Salas on Spotify.
I was going to say, could you not just post the same image every year?
Although this year... This is something you've missed out on, Andy Malt, by shunning Spotify in 2023. This year, everybody was given a sound town.
Oh, yeah.
Which basically is either a town or a city where the average person listens to more or less the same music as you.
Right.
So I could have posted about my sound town, but my sound town was Stockport, which is about 25 miles from where I grew up. So that suggests that for all of my traveling around, I've not taken up any music that I couldn't have got within the little bit of Cheshire that I grew up in. But also, and no offense to Stockport or anybody from Stockport listening, I can't help thinking that Chili Gonzales is a very long way from Stockport. I don't understand. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe everybody in Stockport predominantly listens to piano-based music, which is what I listen to. I do still listen to quite a lot of 90s indie. That's probably where that's coming from. But anyway, it was Spotify Wrapped this week. I'm sure everybody noticed. But not you, because you're not within the Spotify environment.
I mean, so I can tell you, because I use Apple Music, I can tell you about my Apple Music Replay 23 playlist.
Oh, yes. And that came out the day before Spotify Wrapped.
It did, although they update it through the year, so it's always there. But
right.
This year, are you aware of Max Richter's Sleep album?
Oh, well, I'm definitely aware of Max Richter because Spotify told me this week that he's the fourth most listened to artist in the Chris Cook universe because he plays piano.
Beloved in Stockport.
Beloved in Stockport, obviously, according to Spotify stats. But the Sleep, remind me specifically what the Sleep album was about. Was that the album that helps you sleep?
Yes, it's an 8-hour album that you're supposed to play in your sleep, and it's supposed to help you sleep. And I decided I would try it out. So I listened to it in my sleep a couple of times. Gave me quite a bad night's sleep, so I stopped using it. But I've listened to that album twice. Apple Music is very insistent that I have listened to some of the tracks on that album up to 44 times, which I have not. So my stats for the year are just meaningless and completely out there. So I don't know. I haven't got a Soundtown. I don't actually know what I listened to this year. I haven't got any sort of Spotify Wrapped. I've got nothing. All I've got, I mean, I know I did listen to music this year, but I can't share it on social media. So did I really listen to music this year?
No, clearly not. And even if you did have some Apple stats, I think one thing is still certain, although it feels like Spotify Wrapped wasn't quite as big a deal this year as last year, nobody at all cares about the Apple equivalent. I think that's definitely certain.
Fine.
But anyway, we're not here to talk about the music that we have or have not listened to over the last 12 months because, and I think we can say this with some confidence, and apologies to anybody listening who did share their Spotify Wrapped or even their Apple stats on social media this week. Nobody cares what I've listened to, what Andy's listened to, what you've listened to. So we're not going to talk about it. Let's get on with what we are here to talk about this week.
Yeah, we've got a whole load of this week's most interesting music industry stories coming up later, including why Daryl Hall has secured an injunction against John Oates. But first, Sony Music's president of global digital business, Dennis Kuker, has called for a US-wide publicity right through which artists can protect their voices and identity so that they can stop the unauthorized cloning of their voices by AI. He was speaking at another session instigated by members of US Congress exploring the impact of AI on copyright. This one part of Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer's AI Insight Forum. He told politicians that Sony and the record industry more widely is not against the emergence of AI tools for music, saying that music tends to be the proverbial canary in the coal mine for disruption and innovation in entertainment and media, and that everyone expects this to be the case again as the AI industry grows. However, he noted that when Spotify arrived with an incredibly disruptive new business model 15 years ago, it worked with the labels who licensed the then fledgling streaming service because they recognised that it was an experience that consumers wanted and which was therefore an opportunity for the music industry. Some music AI companies are also working with the music industry now, but not all of them. And in fact, many are saying that they can make use of music without doing any sort of deal with the music industry, which Kuka would like all the senators to know is not okay.
It certainly isn't. Although, I'm not actually sure I agree that music is the proverbial canary this time round, because it feels to me that generative AI tools have had a bigger impact so far on basically words and pictures. Mm. So if you're in the book industry or the news industry, or if you are Getty Images, and indeed most of the lawsuits that have been filed testing the copyright obligations of AI companies have not come from the music industry. We do have one music case, but specifically a lyrics case. It is mainly authors and book publishers and newspapers and image libraries like Getty who are testing the obligations. So I'm not sure I do agree with Dennis Kuka on that. Also, while it is true that the European record industry embraced Spotify pretty quickly when Daniel Ek and co. first arrived at their business model, although the fact that Daniel Ek and co. were able to write very large advance checks helped persuade the record industry to get involved. Although I do seem to remember it took quite a bit longer for the American record industry get excited about Spotify. I think it was the free version, wasn't it, that the American label. Certainly, it took quite a few more years to get the US industry to license Spotify when it was already up and running and popular here in Europe.
So you're just saying there's a bit of revisionist history going on here, perhaps?
Maybe. But to be fair, his key points I would agree with. It is definitely...
Also, I mean, if you want to go back, surely pornography is the canary in the coal mine. Does that not actually where things start?
It is something that is often said, and I must admit, about 5-6 years ago, at a music industry event, I should add, they did have a representative of the porn industry discussing how they'd evolved their business models, and it was very interesting. So yeah, maybe Congress should have invited a pornographer to come along to discuss what's happening here. But anyway...
But we wouldn't be discussing that, so it's no. Good that they got a label exec.
That would be another podcast having this discussion, if that had been the case. But anyway... Despite picking holes in some of what Dennis Cooker said in Congress this week, it is definitely true that many AI companies are claiming that they can train their generative AI models that generate music content without negotiating any licenses from the music industry, even if they are using existing songs and recordings as part of the training process. How can they do that? Well, they're pleading good old fair use under US law. And we know this, and you know this, because a couple of weeks ago on Setlist, we talked about how the US Copyright Office is doing a review on the impact of AI on copyright. And all of the AI companies, well, certainly most of them, put in their documents saying, fair use, fair use. When we use music or video or literature, journalism, whatever it is that we're using to train our AI models, fair use. And therefore, we do not need to get permission from copyright owners. Obviously, we know the music industry and indeed all of the copyright industries are adamant that that is not the case. That is a fundamental misrepresentation of American copyright law and the fair use principle. And Cooker was very clear on that at this session this week. And he had various asks at the end of his statement. And one of those was that Congress should assure and government agencies should presume that reproducing music to train AI models in itself is not a fair use.
But perhaps more interesting in Cooker's statement was when he talked about the challenges created by the increasing number of deepfakes and unauthorized voice clones of existing artists that are being generated and posted online. An artist literally makes their livelihood from their voice, he said. Deepfakes intentionally exploit an artist's talent and reputation to steal that income stream. Every stream of a deepfake takes streams and royalty payments away from the legitimate artist. He then revealed that Sony Music has now issued nearly 10,000 takedown notices seeking the removal of unauthorized voice clones, but added that digital platforms are using legal loopholes to drag their feet when dealing with such notices.
Good old legal loopholes. Who doesn't love a legal loophole? Now,
well, not him.
Why? Are you a fan of legal loopholes? Are you here to big up legal loopholes?
I'm saying nothing. I'm neutral.
Anyway, when an AI model imitates an artist's voice, generally speaking, in order for that to work, the AI model is going to need to be trained on that artist's music, which means putting that artist's songs and recordings into the system. And of course, as we've already said, the music industry, having rejected all of those fair use arguments, would say that if you're going to do that with existing recordings and songs, that exploits copyright, and therefore you need to get permission from the copyright owner in order to do that. However, it's also worth noting that there has been much discussion this year about other legal protections beyond copyright that artists could use to stop the unauthorized use of their voices. And in particular, what we usually talk about in this context is so-called publicity rights. In Europe, they're referred to as personality rights, sometimes image rights. Now in the US, which obviously is what is relevant in the context of this session in the US Congress, in the US, publicity rights exist at a state level rather than a US-wide federal level. And it has to be said that it remains a little bit unclear exactly how those publicity rights will work in the context of deepfakes and voice clones. And it is that lack of clarity that is creating these legal loopholes that, according to Cooker, digital platforms are utilizing in order to, as he said, drag their feet when they receive the takedown requests from companies like Sony relating to unauthorized deepfakes. Or in some cases, they're ignoring those takedowns entirely. So, as well as ensuring that Congress and the US government are clear that training an AI model with existing music is not and cannot be deemed fair use, Cooker also asked Congress to close the loopholes around publicity rights and deepfakes. He said in his statement that existing state-level publicity right laws are inconsistent and many are not sufficient to protect Americans against AI clones. Creators and consumers need a clear, unified right that sets a floor across all 50 states. So basically, he would like Congress in Washington to put publicity rights into US-wide federal law. And while that is happening, maybe the UK Parliament and government could do the same, because at least in the US, they do have publicity rights, albeit slightly confusingly and inconsistently at state level. Here in the UK, we don't have them at all. So whatever happens over there, we probably need to replicate over here.
That's interesting. He mentioned consumers there needing protection, as well as creators. And also this week, the IFPI published the results of a survey of 43,000 music consumers, which found that the majority of music fans believe that tech companies training generative AI models with existing recordings really must get permission from the music industry. And that is handy, because that is also exactly what the record industry thinks.
Yeah, as we discussed, training an AI model with existing music, not fair use, not covered by a copyright exception. If you're going to be doing vocal clones, you need to get permission. But IFPI, very clear this week, and they definitely didn't lead the witness when they did this. IFPI, very clear that it's not just record companies and music publishers and artists and songwriters who think this. Music fans think it too.
They're always thinking it.
Well, they did survey 43,000 music consumers in many, many countries around the world. Decent bit of research, this, from the IFPI. It's part of their wider music consumption research. The full research is due any day now. But yeah, it did feel like maybe they asked some loaded questions in that debate. But hey, music fans want this fixed. So Congress, do your work.
Coming up later, why Daryl Hall says I can't go for that to a deal proposed by John Oates on his share of their company. But before that, some other stories from the music industry this week, starting with the sad news of the death of Shane McGowan. The former Pogues frontman died this week after a lengthy period of ill health, having been diagnosed with encephalitis last year. His family said that he passed away peacefully in the early hours of Thursday morning.
Returning to a story we discussed last week on Setlist, the UK government has declared that a final decision should not be made on whether to allow MSG to build one of its Sphere venues in East London, following last week's decision by London Mayor Sadiq Khan to block that plan. So in the last week, the UK government's Secretary of State for Levelling Up, Housing and Communities, what a ridiculous job title for a ridiculous man, Michael Gove, said, OK, maybe London Mayor has made a decision saying we will not have an MSG Sphere venue in East London, in Stratford, but I also want to get involved in this. I want to... Well, actually, what he said was he's going to consider whether he should consider it. It was a bit confusing. But there could be one last stage to this planning application for an MSG Sphere venue in London, even though MSG have now made it pretty clear that they've already given up on this and they don't want to build it anymore. So that could be a massive waste of everybody's time. And if there's a man equipped to waste everybody's time, it is surely Michael Gove.
He is very good at that. Over to the record business now, and BMG has announced a restructure of its operations designed to future-proof the company and further develop its ability to deliver for artists and songwriters on a global scale, it says, because new ways of creating and consuming music and looming changes in streaming economics are challenging us to do even better for our clients.
Talking of streaming economics, I think that's BMG saying that streaming is an old way of consuming music. Feels very current to me, but whatever.
So old-fashioned.
Of streaming economics. Another thing that happened this week was that the Culture Committee in the European Parliament, so that's a committee of MEPs, basically the EU version of the Culture Select Committee in the UK Parliament, it endorsed a report that it commissioned and published earlier this year, basically calling for new EU rules to regulate aspects of music streaming, particularly around transparency of streaming service algorithms and forcing platforms to better credit music makers and rights holders. Also raised some concerns, the classic, how the streaming money gets shared. So interesting to see that conversation now very active at an EU level.
Now, for anyone keen to know what music they're going to be listening to in 2024, the nominees for this year's Brits Rising Star Award were announced this week. They are singer-songwriter Katie Baser, rapidly rising band The Last Dinner Party, and soulful pop singer Sekou. The overall winner will be announced on the 7th of December, with the main Brit ceremony set for the 2nd of March next year. You could read more about all of these stories and everything discussed on this week's episode in the show notes or at completemusicupdate.com. And finally, on this edition of Setlist, a legal battle between Hall and Oates, that being Daryl Hall and John Oates, has been unfolding this month, with court filings initially sealed, which meant that we knew very little other than that Hall had secured an injunction against Oates. It subsequently transpired that Daryl Hall had gone legal to stop John Oates from selling his share in their joint venture business Hall Oates Enterprises to Primary Wave and had secured an injunction to halt that deal.
So in a declaration filed with the court on Wednesday, Hall explained that this joint venture company, Hall Oates Enterprises, controls the Hall & Oates trademarks. It controls the duo's personal name and likeness. It also receives the recording royalties that they get from their record company, and it manages the duo's website and social media. And Hall said that Oates had spent months earlier this year insisting that he wanted to continue having joint ownership in that business. But then, said Hall, committed the ultimate partnership betrayal. That's quite bold, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
I feel like there's a whole jukebox musical to be made out of this dispute. But in case you were wondering, the ultimate partnership betrayal related to Oates secretly, without consulting Hall, negotiating this deal with Primary Wave to basically sell his share in the company without getting Daryl Hall's approval, which Daryl Hall says he needs to get under the deal that was done back in the day between the two musical collaborators.
But there are two sides to every story, of course, and Oates made his own declaration to the court this week, saying that everything Hall had said about him was inflammatory, outlandish, and inaccurate. What's more, his recent business decisions were merely a response to decisions previously made by Daryl Hall. He said in his filing, over the years, Daryl has consistently and publicly been adamant about being perceived as an individual rather than part of a duo or group. On this point, I agree. I now must act with truthfulness and make decisions that are right for myself, my family, and my artistic future. Now, you might think that that's you know, a bit of falling out and they're just saying, yeah, we're individuals. But it is something that Daryl Hall has said in the past. Just last year when during a reunion, when Daryl Hall appeared on Bill Maher's Club Random podcast, he was very keen to stress that Oates was his business partner and not his creative partner, stressing that while they made records together, we've always been very separate. And that's a really important thing for me.
Yeah, I think it's worth reiterating the thing you just alluded to, that although it's been a long time since Hall & Oates released any records together, they have been touring together until pretty damn recently. Mm. So I don't know, maybe Daryl Hall making those sorts of statements, things been brewing behind the scenes, and now John Oates has been like, ha, if I'm not your creative partner, I'm not going to be your business partner either. Primary Wave want to give me a lot of money. But anyway, you mentioned that Daryl Hall got this temporary injunction, basically meaning that the deal with Primary Wave is paused. There is then arbitration happening outside of court, as well as the legal proceedings in court. And at a court hearing this week, which is those submissions were made the day before the court hearing, basically Hall said to the judge, can you extend this injunction, stopping any deal from going through while the arbitration goes through the motions, while the legal proceedings in court go through the motions? And basically the judge said yes. So this dispute is still ongoing. Will it all get settled and then they'll both issue statements saying how much they love each other, or will we get some more acrimonious fun statements? I think it goes without saying that we would quite like it to be the latter.
I'd really like some more statements like the ones we got this week, because they were good statements. And obviously I feel bad that they've fallen out with each other, and after such a long time working together, that's never a good thing. But yeah, more statements like that, please. Inflammatory, outlandish, and inaccurate. Great stuff. But that's all we've got time for on this week's set list. We'll be back with another episode next week, and you can keep up with all the latest music industry news every day at completemusicupdate.com.